When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to this edition of Voices from the Archives. I'm Maurice O'Keefe. In this week's podcast, we tell the story of the survival of Enniscoe House, one of Ireland's historic Georgian country houses on the shores of Loch Conn in North County Mayo, built in 1740s. The house is perfectly preserved and was the venue for the launch of the latest collection on Irish life and lore, The Landed Gentry in Ireland, and is available to see now on our website. On the estate is now a heritage centre and was recently visited by the American President Joe Biden. And the guest house is run by Susan Kellett and her son DJ, who are descendants of the Pratt family. And in this podcast, you will hear Susan and her brother, Nicholas Nicholson, talk about the history, the family connection, and the management and upkeep of Enniscoe House and the Heritage Centre on the estate. And later in the podcast, you will hear the story of one of the gardeners who worked there all his life that I recorded 15 years ago and gives a fascinating account of the management of the country estate house.
Well, the Pratts, their original family home was Cabra Castle in Kingscourt in County Cavan. But what happened was that in 1834, the Mervyn Pratt of the day married his distant cousin, Madeline Jackson, who would be my great-great-great-grandmother, and they came to live at Enniscoe. And what it appears is that the Pratts preferred Enniscoe to Cabra, and yeah, although they kept Cabra and spent part of the year there, they spent a lot of time at Enniscoe. So in the 1830s, the original family name was Jackson here, but in the 1830s it became the Pratts.
There was an old boy called Mervyn Pratt, Major Pratt, who had been very damaged in the First World War. He'd been damaged in the South African War, wounded again in the First World War, very highly decorated. His younger brother, who would have produced an heir, no doubt, was killed in the First World War. And he had two properties, Cabra Castle outside Kingscourt in County Cavan, and then Enniscoe across Bologna, County Mayo. And my father then came jointly into his estate with a cousin of his called Mervyn Shepherd. And in the carve-up, basically because my mother's family had come from North Mayo, Burke, she wanted him to take the Mayo property.
Well, the connection is that my father, Jack Nicholson, was the younger son in the Nicholson family, and their family home was Balrath Bury in Kells in County Meath. But my father inherited from his cousin, Mervyn Pratt, this house, Enniscoe, and he inherited it in 1950. But there's a double Mayo connection because my mother, whose maiden name was Burke, she was Patricia Burke, and she came from a house called Heathfield, which was in Ballycastle, not very far from here in County Mayo. Now, that house went in the 1920s, but her family kept a holiday house on Loch Conn, very, very close to here. And so all our childhood, we came down to Mayo for the summer, and we stayed in their family holiday home. But we visited my father's cousin, who was an elderly bachelor living in this house. Now, my brother and I thought this was a bit strange, while we were being dragged off for tea every year with this rather grumpy old man who we thought really didn't like small children very much. But there was a reason, and I think that Mervyn Pratt decided to leave this house to my father because he was convinced that my mother had such strong Mayo connections that she would try to keep the house and look after it. And of course that turned out to be true, because it wasn't easy to keep houses like these. And in fact, as my father said, when he inherited the house, he thought he could come and live here and have his horses and so on. He then discovered there was no money. And as he said, from time to time, he earned the money in Dublin to lose it in Mayo. And it was the fact that my mother was so keen on being in Mayo that's the main reason that this house, that they continued to struggle with this house.
1950, he inherited, or he took on Enniscone, County Mayo, when Major Pratt died. And my mother then, as I said before, was, because she had been a Burke from Mayo, they'd been put out of their house, which was a house called Heathfield up in Ballycastle, and had come to live in Meath. She thought it was a very romantic idea to go back down to Mayo to this property, which the Pratts owned. It originally had been called Prospect, but its real name was Enniscoe, the Island of the Hinds, where the tradition was that the local chieftain had bred these wolfhounds. All that property belonged to the MacWilliam Burkes, of which she would have been a descendant. So she thought it had been taken, of course, by the planters in the 17th century. So she thought it was rather full circle to get the land back. Parents took over Enniscoe. That was the Pratt house, so that I inherited. That came to me. As I said, then after I realised I wasn't going to make a go of it, and I didn't think I had the right approach to opening it up and making it, wash its nose by turning it into a hotel or a B&B or whatever it was. My sister then was in England. She'd been in the probation service, much more efficient and harder working than I ever was, saying, was there any chance of an opening for her at Enniscoe? So I said, not then and there, but subsequently, I said, well, if you want it, you can have it. So, okay. So she gave me the house in Dublin, which I still have.
In 2009, I visited Enniscoe House, and there I met Johnny Dyra, who was a gardener on the estate and worked there all his life.
Well, Major Pratt was here that time.
And his wife, and how many children?
Oh, he was never married, Major Pratt. He was down in Kingscourt in County Cavan, because his father, Joe Pratt, had two places. He had this one and he had a place in Kingscourt at the Wishing Well in Cabra Castle. It was 1,000 acres there, and a great lovely castle in. So there was two brothers, Major Mervyn and Joe and Adley. Well, they were both in the war, but Adley was blown to bits in the war. He said if he stayed 4 hours later, all was over. And they said they couldn't, they were hungry, and there was rats in the trenches and the lice and everything. They were worn out, you know.
Yeah.
Well, that's why he jumped up and I was into him. So Major Pratt then, the father left this place to Major Pratt. When he was waiting in cabin before that, but he used to come up in the month of June fishing to Loch Conn. And he used to want to wait another while, but he wouldn't let him. He'd say, go home to your business now.
Yeah.
And he was to give the other place in cabin to the Major Mervyn.
Oh, I
to
see.
To Mervyn Pratt, the
yeah.
mother.
Yeah.
But that never happened. Poor fella. He was.
Isn't this a magnificent garden? Really
it's nice, all
beautiful.
Right. My father came from Keene now, back in Keene.
Yeah.
And his mother came from there. He came here to Nesco, where I am now. He came here in 1901.
Will we go down through the garden?
He did. Oh, we can, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Your father came here first?
He did, yes. And my uncle John, his brother as well. Two brothers.
And when they came here, they were working, what member?
Well, John was in the yarn. He was a yarner. And my father worked in the cowhouse, looking after cows and calves and whitewashing the walls. That time it was all whitewashed and scuffling the street because they were all cobblestones that time.
Were
in
they?
The yarn, yeah. Yes. And still is, but we put some clay over them and to make a lawn in one place here out from the house there.
So you worked in this, and as a young lad, I suppose you worked.
Well, I worked.
You served
the
your
land,
time, did you? You just
mostly out on the land. I worked.
Yeah.
With the tractors and hay and different things, sided and cattle and sheep and all that kind of thing. I used to do work here, but if they wanted something, I'd have to come and bring it to them.
Yeah.
I used to cut the lawns out around the house, but they cut the lawns here. The gardener and the lad that comes, her son comes in helping.
And what kind of staff were here? How many people working for Pratt's at the time?
Well, at that time, in major time. Hmm. Well, in Joe Pratt's time, there was 21 men here first, working the garden and all around everywhere, you know, and doing all kinds of work. Then you used to have some of them out on the drains in the winter time. You used to clean the drains going through all the woods.
Yeah.
Either two men in a drain here. He wouldn't put them together now. He'd put two in one place and he'd share the other two some other way.
Well, look at the apple trees.
And they had everything here. There was a lovely garden, surely, that time.
Yeah.
They had pear trees along the wall and plums and dandelions. They had everything. Rhubarb. Anything you could mention that was growing. The beautiful great onions. They'd have turnips and mangoes for the cattle for the winter time. Ah, they were great. It was amazing. There was a last house here too as well. But yeah. It was blown away with the wind and it was forgotten about. All yeah. that building there was a last house as well.
Yeah.
Well, the guy had done up a few times, but it was let go and it should have been kept up by right. But
and the big high garden wall then that surrounds
the
whole
wall,
lot.
Geez, yeah. They were built all years ago round yeah. the wall everywhere.
Yeah.
So again, the both walls.
And every man had his own job. Like your father was here in the garden.
No, my father, my uncle was in the yard.
Yeah, or your uncle was
John.
In the garden, yeah.
My father was in the yard, the cow yard.
Yeah.
Used to milk the cows and feed some calves and do whitewashing and bring water that in from the well and get kippings for to light the fire for the cook and all that yeah. kind of thing. That time.
What about his friends and visitors coming to the house?
Oh, they used to have friends coming from different places around. Well, I believe England, Ireland, everywhere. Come on fishing. He'd invite them for fishing, you know.
Yeah.
At that time. But I wouldn't remember. My mother used to be telling me they used to come from down the north here. There was Hamiltons and there was Arkwrights and I just can't remember the names of them. You know, it's a long time ago now.
And they obviously well looked after.
Oh, yes, they were, yes. They were a great time. They used to love the fishing. There was great fishing on the lake that time.
Yeah.
They used to get a lot of trout. The major was a great fisherman. He used to get the best of trout.
Yeah.
And he'd always bring my father or John on the lake. And they knew all about it, you know. They had two boats. There was one, the racing, Lily, that had a name on it. It was a racing boat. And they had another boat for fishing then. It was an awful big heavy boat. So he used to pull that one. But then they had an engine later down. But he'd rather be pulling, like for a short run across the lake, he'd get my father to row the boat. Then they'd get the engine going if they wanted to cross the lake or whatever. You know, if they wanted to go different places for the fishing.
And that was the fishing, and then maybe during the early spring, maybe there was there shooting?
Well, they used to have shoots. Yeah, they used to have a shoot every year. the major would have a shoot, yes.
Oh,
and I was only very small that time, I don't know much about the shoot, but Susan still has the shoot here.
Yeah. And at that time, was there a grouse or pheasant or...
No, there was pheasants. There was great also the labour pheasants that time. But the foxes came along and they played away altogether. And the pine martens. And the mink came a few years ago and they were a disaster altogether. So now we have woodcock and pigeons. And we have pine martens, mink, foxes, badgers, what have you. Now they just took away the pheasants on it. So there was lovely pheasants here when I was only small. It used to be back in the fields back there. They used to have a man from up the road used to have it hired and he set potatoes in it. And the pheasants used to be out picking the, when they're digging, they'd be done picking the small ones, they'd leave them after them, it wouldn't be worth picking some of them. And the pheasants used to have a great time with them.
But I suppose, will we go back out here again into the more formal garden? Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Look at the lovely arch that we have here.
Do
you remember that being built?
Oh, I remember coming in here one time. I was only very small. The uncle told me he was coming in from the glass houses one day.
Yeah.
And what the name of God came out after about for the hawk. And struck his claws and it fell over and he was afraid he'd tear the face of him. And of course he battered him off, but he got away, but then the bull got away as well. He came out about here and he hit him right in the church, coming out there at awful speed, after the bird. He saved the bird anyway, but the hawk really broke his neck in his chest.
The hawk went straight into his chest.
He was coming out after the bird out there, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He didn't know he was coming in, of course. And that's the fact, he told me that man in the town.
Yeah, yeah.
Surely.
Johnny, I suppose you must know every single inch of this place.
Oh, indeed I do. I could go down with my eyes closed, I believe.
Yeah.
That's the Susan. She said, you know every blade of grass on the place.
Yeah.
I said, I don't know. Do I know them? But I went through them anyway.
What about the old outhouses here then?
Oh, yes.
The stables.
Were.
We must go down that way.
Oh, yes. We can walk here, but we don't want anywhere.
Yeah.
It's a nice carpet for us.
Isn't there? It's
you won't get wet.
No, it's lovely. It's soft.
Rich, no.
Yeah. Yeah.
These were hot houses first now. Here, they were nearly all hot houses, and there was a place below the fair end where they had a bin, and they used to have grain in it for the horses and bran in the steel bin. They had a man here looking after the cattle. He was Michael Murphy, God rest him. He was a neighbour of mine down the road. But he was, I just remember him, he used to come into the house and he'd come up, he'd looking after the cattle, and he'd come up and he'd come in singing for us, and he was a great man for the library, reading the books. And
we'll see. Yes,
I was very nice, though. I remember that well. Well, he was looking after them that time, but then later down then was Anthony McDonough from back in Creevey. He was looking after them. And there used to come a man, he was McDermott, I think was his name. He used to come by in them. And they'd have them brought on the road now there where they were coming at the gate line, at the little road below that. They'd be holding them there on the road, but there wasn't very little care that time. And the man would come and pick you up whatever ones he wanted to buy, and he'd buy them. And the man would have two or three lads ready with him to bring them, to walk them to Ballinay and get them on the train.
Yeah.
To bring them wherever they wanted them, to Dublin or whatever, at that time. But you wouldn't be on the road too long, would you be?
Before I forget this, all the people that worked here, down through the years,
oh God,
you know them all. And
there was a lot of them, oh Jesus.
So,
they're all mostly neighbours now, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Starting now with in the house itself, the maids, including your mother, I mean, she was one of the workers. Who was working with her there?
There was a relation of hers, she was a cook from Cavan as well. Jenny Corrigan was her name. She was the cook. Well, there was other girls from behind Cross Malina working here. There were Leonards, four sisters at different times, working in the house. And there was a girl, the name Letty Summer from up in, I think it was Manor Hamilton or somewhere up there she was from. She used to work here as well. But then later down then, when Susan came here, she got the girls from Mountabout, you know, the young ones. Be home from school and holidays, she'd be working here. And then the other girls as well coming in every day. They were married when back different places as well.
Oh, and during the major's time out in the yard?
Jenny Corrigan was in the major's time. She was from Cavan.
Yeah.
She was a relation of my mother, in fact. And
Who was helping you out in the land and the farm?
Oh, there was William Murphy, Mikey Lynn, Paddy Cleary, Mickey Kim, his son Kim, were coming to me then. Well, Paddy was at the same time. But we had a lot of cattle, we had to get extra help, you know.
But what were they?
I used to separate the milk. My father used to do that before I came along. With the separator. The hand.
Did they have a separator here?
They had, yes. Well, how do you do?
Hello.
Oh, yes, they had. A lovely separator. Got off and I separated, my goodness. Yes, I think you would.
And so you must have been making some fine.
I have nearly forgot about it. Yeah. Oh, they were the hot houses as well, the new houses are built.
Yeah.
In here, there's three of them. Yeah. Where they used to do the churn. There was a bench here now. There was a bench in here built up, and the separator was bolted on when I'd be separating it here, you know. And then they used to bring the cream in here.
And in this final part of the survival of Enniscoe House and the estate, we return again to Susan Kellett.
Here in Enniscoe now, you're managing this estate. Is there farming going on here, or what happens? How do you keep it?
Well, the main way of keeping it is the business in the house, which is doing accommodation and dinner, bed and breakfast. There isn't enough land here to keep the property, and in fact, I let some of the land. Mainly, what I do is manage the forestry and the timber. Again, it's very small. There's under 200 acres left here after the many acres that went over the years. And it's a question of managing. I mean, for example, the Heritage Centre is set up as a separate company. Now, they don't pay me any money, but they manage that part of the property and indeed have taken over the organic vegetable garden. And I manage the other gardens, and there's a visitor centre there. And without grants over the years, it wouldn't have been possible to keep it. And this is the difficulty with these sort of houses, where the amount of land drops, and there isn't sufficient income from it, and you have to have an alternative income or find other ways of generating it.
Well, it started in the 1980s, and by 1992 we had got funding and we had opened. President Mary Robinson was able to come and open the Heritage Centre here. Now, before that, they'd had rented premises in the village of Cross Molina. They were in the old schoolhouse where we were running an indexing program.
Okay.
And so we managed. Now, again, underlying that, although it is, it's very much community-based, what it was doing was on the back of the family history research, which was what was bringing in the income.
Mm-hmm.
And that was providing local community involvement, interest, and employment.
Of course, and so many people nowadays want to discover their roots and where they came from.
Well, now it's completely done. I mean, in the early days, I was doing some of the research myself.
Yeah.
But now, of course, it's all indexed. Yeah. That we have a professional researcher attached to the centre out there. And as I say, the big one is the website Roots Ireland, which people can go on to. Now, some people may come directly to Mayo to do their research. Okay. Others will go online and go through Roots Ireland and will maybe get enough there for what they want because the records are up, or maybe from there will be directed to the local centre here.
Okay.
Because the centre here covers half of County Mayo, with another office down in Ballinrobe doing the other half of Mayo.
And coming from a staunch Anglo-Irish background, did that come against you at any stage?
It did and it didn't. I suppose I'd had a fairly, because I'd had a different sort of career, because I'd been in, I was a trained social worker and had been involved in that side, and wasn't directly inheriting the property. And because I then just chose to ignore it and keep working anyway. I think, yes, it's there, and you would occasionally, even today, somebody would say, oh, well, you know, that's the big house. But you just manage it.
And was it worse than what it is today now?
I think, well, if you're talking particularly about this place, it was more an unknown quantity.
Yeah.
Now, Mervyn Pratt had always had good relationships.
Okay. But you were saying people, local people, were afraid to come in here during
They didn't come in here. I mean, for example, the local school, Gortner Abbey, which was run by the nuns, the Order of Jesus and Mary, they had a tradition that every, I think it was a date in June or July, they would bring all the school children up by invitation to visit the gardens.
I see.
And Mervyn Pratt would show them round and give them fruit and flowers to take away with them. Now, they continued that a bit after my parents came in until the gardens fell into such disrepair that the nuns gave up. On one occasion, of course, by that time I'd taken over the farm and was doing bits and pieces. We needed a part for the tractor. I can't remember exactly what it was, but I think it was a vital ring that linked one piece with another. So I went into the local hardware shop, where the owner was a very cantankerous and elderly old man who didn't have the best reputation, but he was the one who would have the piece. So I went in and I had the sample and I knew exactly what I wanted. And I said to him, I want this piece. And he looked at it and he looked at me rather disbelievingly and said, well, you don't really know what it is. And I said, no, that's the piece I want. He said, well, bring the boss in. And I said, sorry, I'm the boss and this is the piece.
The contents and the interior is also very important. Would you agree?
Yes, I would. And I think there's a number of things. A lot of things have gone out of this house because my brother and I had to do a certain division. But the I think what's very sad is when you get a house, when it is a historic house, and it's been completely emptied, and somebody may come in and do a very good job of refurbishing and refurnishing, but it's not really the same as the generations leaving their bits and pieces. Now, a lot of stuff will get lost, but quite a lot will survive. And certainly, if you have visitors coming to this house or any historic house, it's not just looking at the house and the architecture; it's the history and the story.
And how important is it to you to keep this together and the not just the place but also the archives, the library, the papers, the history?
Well, I'd have a particular interest myself in doing it, and you know, apart from this house, I was very involved in the Irish Family History Foundation and setting up the national network of research centres, and we have one out in our heritage centre that covers half of County Mayo, with another office down in Ballinrobe doing that bit. So I'd have a personal interest in the history, and I have. My brother started quite a lot of work in researching the different family lines, and I took that over from him. So, and we've written various bits and pieces for ourselves. So I'd know the history of the house pretty well, and would take an interest in that.
I must say, coming here and talking to you about the history of your family was indeed an absolute pleasure, and thank you so much.
In this podcast, you've been listening to Nicholas Nicholson, recorded in January 2020. Susan Kellett, recorded in June 2014. And Johnny Dyra, recorded in 2009 and has since passed away. All these interviews are available on our website, irishlifeandlore.com. My name is Maurice O'Keefe, and I look forward to bringing you another podcast next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.